final case of the morning is Lee against the Indiana Department of Corrections. Mr. Fry.
May it please the court, my name is Eric Fry, and I represent the appellant in this case, Christine Lee. Christine Lee was a correctional officer at the Wabash Valley Correctional Facility, which is located south of Terre Haute near Carlisle, Indiana. She began her work in September of 1997 and was subjected to two distinct and rather pervasive periods of sexual harassment while she was at her employment. The first one resulted finally in a reprimand of her captain, who was engaged in that activity of sexual harassment of her. And then after that, she felt as though things got better and she was going to get some relief. And as you can see from the facts, they got much, much worse. This case represents, I think, an extremely serious and very, very pervasive kind of sexual harassment case, because it involved activity where a correctional officer was accused of a crime. She was accused of all kinds of illegal activity for the purpose of engaging in sexual harassment of her, by a captain, by a supervisor of her, and then that activity was supported and engaged in further by many of his other superiors and some of the other fellow workers there. The second period of sexual harassment extended essentially from July 1998 onward until finally in September of 1998, Christine Lee stopped working there based on doctor's advice because she could no longer handle the mental and physical problems that had happened to her from that harassment.
When was that in relation to the discharge of Watson?
Watson was not discharged until December the 5th of 1998. One of the problems with this case is, obviously, the district court granted summary judgment primarily because he felt the statute of limitations had run on the 300-day applicable period for reporting the case and making a complaint to the EEOC. That date would have been in October of 1998, while this investigation was still ongoing. There was not even a decision made about the investigation of Captain Watson until long after the October date when the time would have run. It's our position the court was incorrect in applying the Galloway decision and some others of this court, saying that there's a hard, fast 300-day requirement where there's an ongoing investigation that's happening here.
Had he not been finally terminated, would she then have had no cause of action?
Beg your pardon?
Had he not been finally terminated?
Well, I think she has to wait to see what the response is. Had he not been terminated and they found that she was not correct in her allegation, I think she then has a choice to then go to the EOC and then ultimately go to court to prove that she is correct. I mean, I think that she would have still had a cause of action. I think the problem in this case is not that she didn't have a cause of action. The question is, when is she barred from going to court at all because of not pursuing it through the EEOC?
Well, when did she know she was harassed?
Well, I think that's a very difficult case thing in these cases to know.
She obviously doesn't need somebody else to tell her, does she?
Well, no, she doesn't need anybody to tell her, but I think she has a legal standard to meet, and that is that she has to be harassed in a manner that is so extensive that it interferes with her work activities. Well, after she's gone in September, it's interfered with her work activities, and they put her on leave, and they give her advice about how to handle things. Finally, she filed a workman's compensation claim because she's given advice about what benefits she has from the facility, and ultimately she finds out that he is discharged in December. So they have agreed with her, and at that point they enter findings that yes, he was guilty of sexual harassment, yes, she has a claim. In fact, there's no dispute here by anybody. The district judge found that there was pervasive, very severe sexual harassment. He just simply cut off the line in October and said nothing beyond October is relevant. We think there are a lot of things beyond October that are relevant. First of all, the discharge didn't happen until December the 5th, which is within the 300 days. Then after that, additional things occur. She again continues to get letters from inmates. The facility then finally tells her to go back to work after she knows from letters from inmates that the same people who were there as her supervisors have now been promoted to captains who assisted Watson in doing this.
So she can sue on that alone, whatever took place within the 300 days.
Well, she might be able to, but we're afraid the court's going to say, no, that's not tied to the previous activity, and that's not somehow related to the sexual harassment. I'm not sure what another court...
Well, it may not be sexual harassment.
The discharge?
Well, no, the letters from the inmates and whatever else is going on.
No, I think those are probably not in themselves sexual harassment. What happened was she was ordered to go back to work then while her claim was actually pending in district court by the facility against medical advice, and she refused to do that, and she was terminated by the department then, by the DOC. That was because, and her doctors advised her not to go back to work because the people that were participating in the harassment and assisted Watson were still there and would have been supervising her, and she was very afraid of going back to work under those conditions. And then they found
out. At that point, she certainly knew whatever had happened in the previous 300 days was not good.
Well, that's right, but by that time, we were already in court by that time.
No, I'm talking about when your doctor told her not to go back to work.
Well, she knew that she was ill in the September 1998 timeframe. That's true. And they assured her they would give her benefits. She was given, one of the arguments the state was making at the time was she had no economic harm because she requested benefits, got benefits. She really didn't have any economic disadvantage, and it didn't really interfere with her job. That was their position for a while early in the case. They really didn't plead the affirmative defense of statute of limitations until late in the case when we were at a point where summary judgment was being discussed. But it's our belief that these things that happened later are connected to the earlier harassment. So it's really a continuing matter that continues to occur from 1998 clear up until 2000 when Christine Lee herself is terminated for refusing to go back to work with the people who were harassing her. And we think that shows evidence of a continuing pattern of harassment and also a retaliation against her for pursuing a claim against the institution. I think that the Frazier case, which this court has cited, indicated that during the time the employer pursues an investigation to take action about or consider a sexual harassment complaint, the statute of limitations is extended. That's the way I read Frazier. It's found at 263 Fed 3rd 663. If it's truly extended during that period of time...
How is that consistent with Delaware State College against Ricks?
Well, I think they're somewhat inconsistent. If you read Frazier...
But then we have to follow the decisions of the Supreme Court.
Well,
Ricks holds that considering a charge of discrimination does not affect the time to file a charge with the EEOC. The holding of the Supreme Court... What else does one do?
Well, it just seems to me that this court in Frazier did look at the fact that where there is an affirmative defense available to an employer for investigating and taking action, you have to wait and see what happens from that before the employee is bound to do anything. And I think that makes sense. Now, I don't know how to square that with Riggs. I think we're going to have to see in further decisions just if they are truly inconsistent or not. But it does make sense that you shouldn't have to file a claim if the employer is investigating something and looking into whether or not your allegations are true or false. Because you have to give the employer a chance, as I understand the current state of the law, the employer has a chance to investigate, take appropriate action, and if appropriate, they may remedy the problem for you. And if
well,
that occurs...
He got fired, so what more did she want?
Well, he got fired in December, that's correct. And within 300 days of that, she did file a claim with the EEOC.
I mean, that's all that's going to come of it. He's going to get fired or he's going to stay there.
Well, he could stay, and they could say that her allegations are unsupported. I mean,
then she wouldn't sue.
Perhaps not. If she found that she was not credible, or a lawyer found she was not credible, she might not bring an action. I see my time is down to where just our rebuttal time is left. Mm-hmm. I think I have just 2 or 3 minutes left. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Fry. Ms. Hornap-Gilman.
May it please the court. The district court properly granted the Department of Corrections motion for summary judgment because Ms. Lee's sexual harassment claims are time barred and many of her retaliation claims are also time barred or she failed to establish a prima facie case. Lee filed her EEOC claim on July 30th of 1999. Therefore, the 300-day limitation period goes back to October 3rd of 1998. Here, Lee's last day of work at the Department of Correction was September 3rd of 1998. Therefore, she's no longer even at the Department of Correction within the 300-day period. She has no contact with Officer Watson, the one who is alleged to have committed the sexual harassment against her. Therefore, no acts that could be called sexual harassment occur within the 300 days. Also, the continuing violation theory does not apply to her sexual harassment claim because Ms. Lee knew of the sexual harassment prior to the falling into the 300-day period. She first filed her, she complained first to the Internal Affairs, I believe it was May 22nd, 1998. They scrupulously investigated this claim and on June 19th of 1998 issued a reprimand to Officer Watson. The matter seemed to be cleared up and again the sexual harassment began again, but yet the investigation instantly started where I believe on July 23rd of 1998 was when she filed her second complaint. At that point, Officer Watson was moved to a different, was transferred over to, I believe, the trailers, and she was transferred over to Towers to get her away from Officer Watson. The investigation took place, and on September 7th of 1998, a final determination was found as to the sexual harassment. Therefore, even at that point, she's not within the 300-day period. Thus, her sexual harassment claims are time-barred. Likewise, her claims on the retaliatory discharge or on retaliation are also time-barred. She claimed that first, I believe, the claim was that she was moved to a less desirable position. Those were also all done within or outside the 300-day time period. And she also claimed she was accused of wrongdoings and misconduct by other inmates. Those were taken care of prior to October 3rd. On October 1st was when the final inmate was found to have been guilty of abuse of mail or of false informing. The next was the denial of compensation of workers' compensation benefits. She was denied those workers' compensation benefits not because she filed her sexual harassment claim, but rather because workers' compensation does not cover any type of stress leave. That is the reason that she was denied those claims.
And who makes that decision?
I believe it was the Wausau Insurance Company that made that decision. But there's, it's the law that stress leave is not covered under workers' compensation.
And it's not someone at the DOC.
No, it was not someone at the DOC. It was the Wausau Insurance Company that covered the insurance for them. Finally, the termination of her long and short-term benefits also was not retaliation because under the Indiana Administrative Code, you can have a maximum of 24-month period for any type of mental leave, and she had taken those 24 months at the point of September 4th of 2000. Therefore, these benefits were not actually terminated because of her filing a sexual harassment claim, but rather they were terminated because there was no choice. It was an operation of law. Finally, the termination of her employment, that had nothing to do with the filing of a sexual harassment claim. She had exhausted all of her benefits, disability benefits, under the state employment plan. Therefore, she needed to return to work. She did not return to work, and there was no discretionary action that could be taken, all that could be done was to terminate her employment with the Department of Corrections, and that is what was done. So because the district court properly granted summary judgment, we ask this court to affirm the district court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Fry?
I'd like to point out that there is a substantial disagreement among counsel about the issue of her, Christine Lee's, termination itself. It certainly is linked to the sexual harassment. The medical evidence which was in the record shows that she could not return to work because of the sexual harassment. So it certainly is a result of that. It also does not show in the medical evidence that she could not work at all. It simply shows she could not work at that facility. That facility because the people in charge of that facility had assisted Watson in harassing her previously the previous year. So we believe very strongly her termination is an act of retaliation and that she is entitled to a hearing and trial on that issue because they would not discharge a man who had not had a sexual harassment problem. If he had a physical problem and could work at another facility, they obviously would let him work somewhere else. But because she could not go back to work because of her gender, because of the sexual harassment problem, they terminated her. And that's exactly what happened here. And there's evidence that you can infer from the record that her termination is from the medical evidence that because of the sexual harassment, she could not physically or mentally do the job there under those conditions. And I think the state is wrong about that position. I'd like to just say that it's our position that this is a very serious case where a woman has had a very, very life-threatening, life-changing experience from this kind of harassment. It's not the kind of case you simply see where simple verbiage or something on the job is complained about and we have people who take actions because of rather insignificant things. These were very significant issues, and we think they are very serious and merit the court's attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be